Frank was only about halfway to Brownwood when he heard the hoofbeats of another horse somewhere nearby. Reining in, Frank waited for the other rider to approach. He knew that a trail from the southwest merged with the main road right about here.
Evening.
Who's that?
It's Frank Morgan, Mrs. Stratton.
Morgan? What are you doing skulking around here, gunfighter?
I'm not skulking, ma'am. I was just on my way into Brownwood and realized there's somebody else on the road.
Well, thanks for being quiet and not spooking my horse.
Some folks might think it was a mite unusual for a lady to be riding around after dark by herself.
I've never claimed to be a lady, and I've got a .45 on my hip and a Winchester in the saddle boot that would make anybody think twice about bothering me.
Yes, ma'am. I expect they would.
Don't ma'am me. My name's Callie.
And I'm Frank.
If she wanted to be friends, Frank was willing. She might know what her brother was up to these days. And even if she didn't, Frank had never minded having a conversation with a strikingly attractive red-headed woman.
Has Ranger Beaumont sent for reinforcements yet?
Not that I know of. Beaumont doesn't let me in on everything he's doing, though.
He might want to give it some thought. My brother has been talking to that Flint Coburn a lot these past few days. I don't think that's a good sign.
I reckon not. Coburn's been in plenty of range wars.
Isn't that true of you too, Frank?
I never sold my gun to one side or the other like Coburn does. If he's trying to push your brother into something, you can bet Coburn will get more good out of it than anybody else.
That's pretty much the way it struck me too. I don't trust the man. Otherwise, I wouldn't be telling you this.
You want me to have a talk with your brother?
It wouldn't do any good. Oh, Al's too worked up about what happened to Vern Gladwell and about Kane and those other two men still being in jail. We talked to that lawyer fella, by the way. He's got a motion before the court for a change of venue, but the judge won't rule on it until Monday. From what the lawyer said, you're responsible for him being here, Frank.
Frank grimaced. He had given instructions that his part in the whole deal be kept quiet. The lawyer hadn't been as discreet as he should have been.
Why would you want to help us like that?
I just want to see things settled without any more killing.
Do you really think that's possible?
No, I'm afraid I don't.
Neither do I. That's why I'm on my way into town tonight. Al rode in earlier and he hasn't come back yet. I want to make sure he's not getting drunk enough to start a fight.
It's a good idea. I'll ride along with you, if you don't mind.
It's a free country.
They rode along in silence for a few minutes.
Why do you want to head off trouble, Frank? From what I know of you, you've been around violence all your life. There have been books written about you. They say you've killed 1,000 men.
Books say a heap of things that aren't true. I've seen more than my share of bloodshed, though. Smelled powder smoke all across the West. There aren't that many of us left.
The gunfighters, you mean?
Yeah. Our day is past. I can see that. Men like Coburn can't. He's hanging on to the notion that everything can be solved with a gun.
What would you have folks do? Sit around and talk every problem to death?
Lord, no. If it ever gets to the point where folks are afraid to take up the gun when it's truly necessary, this country won't be worth living in. But there's a time and a place for it.
Unfortunately, the time was now, and the place was Brown County. The storm clouds that had loomed for so long were about to break. Frank felt it in his bones. At Callie's suggestion, the first place they headed for was the Palace Saloon. That was fine with Frank. He wanted to see Ace McElvey anyway. And as Callie said, it was likely they would find Rawlings there.
I knew he'd be here. That's his horse tied up over there. Maybe I can talk him into coming home.
Across the room, they immediately became aware of two men facing off. Unfortunately, one of them was Al Rawlings, and another was Deputy Marshal Skeet Harlan. And from the way they stood facing each other, slightly crouched, hands hovering over their guns, they were about to hook and draw.
Al, what are you doing?
Stay out of this, sis. It's between Harlan and me.
That's right, Miss Stratton. Your brother's been boozing it up and talking up a storm tonight about how he's tired of having everybody ride roughshod over him. I told him he was coming down to the jail with me to sleep it off, but he don't want to go.
Let me take him home. There's no need to arrest him.
I'm not going anywhere. Nobody bosses me around.
Frank stood slightly to one side. He had already spotted Ace McElvey standing at the end of the bar, looking worried.
Better back off, ma'am. We'd want you getting hit by a stray bullet.
Frank saw the fingers of Harlan's gun hand twitch a little in anticipation.
Hell with this.
Harlan's gun was half out of its holster when he froze. Frank's Colt was already leveled.
No need for that, deputy. Rollins isn't going to cause any more trouble. Let his sister take him home.
You're drawing on an officer of the law, Morgan. That's reason enough for me to arrest you.
Drawing on you, deputy? No, I was just knocking Rollins down so you wouldn't kill him.
Frank lowered the peacemaker, but didn't holster it.
I wouldn't interfere with an officer of the law.
Then I'm arresting Rollins.
It seems to me that there's no need for that now, deputy. Like Morgan said, Rawlings isn't going to cause any more trouble. Let Callie take him home.
All right, get him out of here.
Come on.
Come on, let's go.
What about you, Morgan? Aren't you going too?
No, I came to town for a drink.
Harlan started to follow Callie and Rawlings out.
I'd be obliged if you'd have a drink with me, deputy. Just to show there are no hard feelings.
There were plenty of hard feelings, and Frank knew it. But he caught the slight nod that McElvey gave Harlan. They were in it together, Frank thought. And like a light going off inside his head, he realized that Flint Coburn must be too.
There. I've had my drink with you.
I'd say that was well done, Mr. Morgan. You stalled Skeet just long enough so that Miss Callie could get her brother out of here.
Well, Rusty, it seems the deputy has consumed my drink. I'll need another, and a new glass, if you please.
Coming right up.
Thanks, Morgan. I was afraid for a minute there was going to be gunplay in here.
He hadn't been afraid of that at all, Frank thought. But instead of saying that, Frank nodded.
I was glad I was able to stop it. There's been enough trouble in Brownwood.
There you go, Mr. Morgan.
Thanks, Rusty.
How would you like to step into my office? I'd like to talk privately with you.
Sure.
He didn't know what McElvey could have to say to him, but there was only one way to find out.
Rusty, give me that bottle. Have a seat, Mr. Morgan.
Thanks, but call me Frank.
I'll do that, if you'll call me Ace. How's your young ranger friend?
Upset, because he hasn't been able to defuse the situation here.
Has he considered sending for a troop of rangers?
He's already done that.
He has.
That's right, they should be here in a few days.
Maybe, if McElvey really was behind the trouble, that lie would force him into moving before he was ready.
Well, that's good to know. Let's drink to the rangers.
To the rangers.
Frank swallowed the rest of the liquor. He knew almost right away that it had been a mistake. A terrible wave of dizziness struck him. He came up out of his chair, reaching for his gun as he did so. But the reflexes that had never let him down were dulled now so that they didn't respond in time.
What did you...
He felt it when he hit the floor. But only vaguely. Frank knew his face was wet, but he wasn't sure if it was from whiskey or blood or both. He was certain now that he had been right about McElvey, but that was scant comfort.
What the hell?
You damn fool! Why did you pick a fight with Rawlings? You could have ruined everything!
You want him dead, don't you? What does it matter whether he dies tonight or tomorrow?
Because he's the ringleader of the small ranchers. Without him, they're less likely to go through with the raid on the cattle pens at Zephyr.
Well, he's not dead. He's on his way back to his ranch by now, and he can go to Zephyr tomorrow with a hangover. What I want to know is what the hell is Morgan doing here?
I saw a chance to get him out of the way. Not only that, but he told me that Beaumont already has sent for more rangers. They'll be here in a few days.
Then they'll be here too late, then, won't they? It's a good thing we plan to wrap this up on Sunday.
Yes. It'll all be over before the rangers get here.
He prodded Morgan in the ribs with a toe.
Now, we need to get rid of this gunslinger.
I'll take care of that. One quick slash across the throat.
Not here, damn it. Take him out and kill him somewhere else. Dispose of the body where it won't be found.
He's not going to wake up anytime soon, is he?
I slipped enough dope in his drink to keep him out for an hour or so. Just don't waste any time.
Open the door.
The deputy dragged the drifter's unconscious form out of the office and into the alley.
Damn. Damn it. Should have gotten a horse first. Well, Morgan, you just sleep here for a while. I'll go get us a couple of horses. Don't you go anywhere.
No one could have done a faster, more efficient job of getting a couple of horses saddled up than he just did. At least that's what Skeet Harlan told himself as he led the animals along the street toward the alley a few minutes later. There was only one problem.
I know this is where I left you, Morgan. Where the hell are you now?
The gunfighter wasn't there. Harlan's panicky eyes darted around the alley. Morgan was gone.
McElvey ain't gonna like this.
But what could Morgan really do to hurt them now? Events were already in motion. In less than 24 hours, it would all be over, and he would be a rich man. The thing was, Morgan shouldn't have woken up yet from the drug that McElvey had slipped him. What in blazes had happened to him? The pounding in Frank's head was like charges of blasting powder going off deep inside a mine shaft. He knew that before he knew anything else.
Hey.
Awake, are you, Morgan?
Frank finally pried his eyes all the way open and saw that he was in a tiny jail cell.
Marshal Keever? What?
What are you doing here? Jail is where drunks who pass out in alleys usually wind up, Morgan. I've got to tell you, though, I thought better of you. I never expected the famous drifter to do such a thing.
You found me?
That's right. You were passed out in the alley behind the palace where I was making my rounds. I brought you here and locked you up. You can sleep it off, and I'll let you out in the morning. You'll have to pay the usual fine for drunk and disorderly.
Not drunk.
That's what they all say.
Frank let him go. His brain was beginning to work again. He remembered being in McElvey's office, remembered the drink he had downed just before everything went black. McElvey had drugged him, of course. Frank had no doubt about that. He was surprised that he was still alive. He would have expected McElvey to take advantage of the opportunity to kill him. He didn't know if Keever was in on the scheme with McElvey or not. It seemed unlikely that he was, even though his deputy Skeet Harlan was involved up to his eyebrows. Keever was just a dupe, but he had inadvertently saved Frank's life. Now it was a matter of staying alive, getting out of here, and finding out what McElvey, Harlan, and Coburn were planning. That would have to wait a little while, though. Right now, Frank was still too weak and groggy to try anything. He needed some sleep. It was Sunday morning. From the looks of things, a bright, clear autumn Sunday in Texas. Keys rattled in the lock in the office door. It swung open, and Skeet Harlan stepped inside. Frank stood up, feeling a lot stronger and steadier than he had the night before. Harlan stopped short at the sight of him.
Morgan, how the hell did you get in there?
Your boss locked me up for being drunk. Haven't you talked to the marshal this morning, Harlan?
Keever spends every Saturday night at the whorehouse. It's one vice, I reckon you could say. Sleeps until noon on Sunday.
I must have really gone on a bender last night. I don't remember a damn thing.
Harlan's face contorted in a snarl, and he drew his gun as he came closer to the bars.
The hell you don't. You can't fool me, Morgan. You know too much to live.
You mean I know about you and McElvey and Coburn?
The way Harlan's eyes widened in surprise told Frank that his wild shot had gone home.
Coburn? How did you know about...
Until right now, I didn't. But thanks to you.
Oh, you're too smart for your own good, Morgan. You just sealed your death warrant.
You're gonna shoot me right here in the jail?
Damn right I'm gonna smoke you. Then I'll drag you out, put a gun in your hand, and tell everybody that you tried to escape.
Nobody's gonna believe that.
Oh, believe me, Morgan. After today, folks around here will have a lot more to worry about than whether or not you were really trying to escape when I blasted you.
What do you mean by that?
Harlan hesitated in answering, but then shrugged.
What's it matter now? In a little while, a bunch of cowmen from those little outfits are going to come storming into town to bust Kane and their other two friends out of the county jail. Some of Coburn's men will be with them. But while the sheriff's got his hands full defending the jail, Coburn's men will hit the banks and every other business in town. They got dynamite to blow open the safes, and when they're done, they'll leave some of the places on fire behind them. The same time, the rest of Rollins' bunch, plus the rest of Coburn's gang, will raid the cattle pens over at Zephyr, stampede the herds that are gathered there, and wipe out Dugan and the other big ranchers. When it's over, though, the double cross kicks in, and Rollins and his friends wind up dead, too. By the time it's all said and done, Brown County will be just about wiped out.
Except for you and McElvey and Coburn. The three of you plan to grab up everything that's left.
You got it, Morgan.
That's why McElvey's been trying to push the two sides into fighting for weeks now. He wanted a big blow-up like this so that everything would be blamed on the trouble over the fence cutting. It'll just be a range war that got out of hand, and nobody will ever think to point a finger at him.
Pretty smart, ain't it? Well, that's enough yammering. It's time for you to die, Morgan. I just wish I had the chance to see how fast you really are.
You still can.
Frank was seizing any slim chance he might still have to stall Harlan.
Let me out of the cell and give me my gun. We'll have it out, just you and me. And may the best man win.
Don't you think it ain't tempting? But I'm smarter than that. So long, Morgan.
Drop it, Harlan!
Callie Stratton, standing defiantly in the open doorway, leveled her Colt at the deputy.
Huh?
Startled, Harlan jerked around toward her. Frank knew that with the deputy's speed with a gun, Harlan might get a shot off at Callie, even if he was hit first.
Frank, are you all right?
I'm a lot better than I was 30 seconds ago. See if you can find the keys to let me out of here.
Why are you...
It's a long story, but I gotta get out of here and put a stop to what's about to happen.
You know about what's going to happen?
I know. I'd already figured out some of it, and Harlan told me the rest. Your brother and some of his friends are gonna attack the big ranchers at Zephyr, and the rest of them are gonna try to break Kane out of jail.
That's right. That man Coburn promised them some help. He said he had friends who would pitch in. I heard them talking last night after we got back to the ranch. Al wasn't sure at first, but Coburn talked him into it. I've been worried about it ever since. That's why I came into town this morning. I thought I ought to warn the sheriff. I was just passing by here, though, when I looked through the window and saw Harlan about to shoot you.
Coburn's so-called friends are members of his gang. They're all outlaws and gunmen. They're gonna loot the town. They're also supposed to double-cross the small ranchers and wipe them out, too.
Then it's really a trap.
That's right. Coburn, Harlan, and Ace McElvey have been working together, trying to get everything to this point. And today it all blows up, unless we can stop it.
Frank stepped out, grabbed the still senseless Harlan, and dragged him into the cell. He closed the door and gave it a shake to make sure it had locked.
Harlan can stay out of trouble in there while I tell Sheriff Wilmot what's going on. Callie, I want you to ride out to Kane's place and tell Beaumont everything I just told you. Tell him to get down to Zephyr and warn Dugan and the others.
We have to head this off, Frank. Otherwise, a lot of innocent people are going to be killed.
He found his peacemaker and gun belt in the marshal's desk, where Kiever had put it the night before.
Get going.
Frank's Stetson hung on a nail on the wall. He took it down and settled it on his head. He hadn't said anything about it to Callie, but he was afraid it might already be too late to keep innocent folks from getting killed. He had just taken a step toward the front door of the office when it opened, and Marshal Kiever stood there, eyes going wide with shock at the sight of Frank Morgan out of the cell.
Good Lord!
The marshal grabbed for the gun at his hip. Frank had the peacemaker drawn and leveled before the marshal's iron was halfway out of the holster.
Take it out slow and easy, Marshal, and put it on the floor.
How did you get out, Morgan? My God, is that Skeet? Did you kill him?
Your deputy is alive, Marshal. Don't worry about that. Slide the gun over here with your foot. Now you're going in the cell with Harlan, and I'm gonna try to stop all the trouble he and McElvey and Coburn have caused.
What in blazes are you talking about?
Ask Harlan when he wakes up. Get in there.
I'd explain the whole thing, but there's just not time.
Frank left them there and stepped out onto the street. He walked quickly toward the county jail several blocks away. Wilmot was an honest man, but he was also simple and direct, not the sort to easily grasp the sort of labyrinthian plotting McElvey, Harlan, and Coburn had done. Frank would just have to lay out the facts for the sheriff and hope Wilmot believed him. A deputy with a shotgun tucked under his arm was on duty at the front door of the jail.
What do you want, Morgan?
I gotta see Sheriff Wilmot.
Well, you're out of luck. He ain't here.
Is he home?
Nope. At this time on a Sunday morning, he'll be at church, of course. Where else would a respectable God-fearing man be? I'd be there myself if it wasn't my turn to work this morning.
Which church?
You ain't gonna go down there and bother the sheriff in the middle of the worship service, are you?
No, I'll wait till it's over. But I want to catch him when he comes out.
Yeah, all right. It's the First Baptist, right down the street.
Much obliged.
Frank started to turn away and then paused.
How many deputies are on duty this morning?
Just me and another fella. And the jailer's inside.
You better tell the jailer to get on the telephone and call every deputy who's hooked up to the line. You're gonna need help before the morning's over.
Trouble?
Bad trouble.
Then Morgan turned and walked quickly toward the First Baptist Church. Frank hated to disturb these people at their worship, but there was no time to waste. He told a deacon that seeing the sheriff was urgent, and the deacon obliged by going to find Wilmot. Frank waited impatiently outside until Wilmot finally showed.
Here now, what's all this about? I don't take kindly to being interrupted when I'm visiting with the Lord.
Frank heard a low rumble in the distance, almost like thunder, but the sky overhead was a clear, beautiful blue. He looked to the east and saw a thin haze of dust rising into the air. It would take a lot of horses to kick up that much dust, he thought.
Sorry to bother you when you're contemplating heaven, Sheriff. But I thought I'd better tell you that hell's about to come to call.
Beaumont stepped out of the cabin when he heard a rider coming hell for leather toward him. He was surprised to see it was Callie Stratton. Her hat had come off and was hanging on her back by its chin strap. Beaumont knew right away that something had to be really wrong to cause such urgency on Callie's part.
Ty, there's trouble!
Well, get down and tell me about it.
No time!
Beaumont listened intently as she poured out the message Frank Morgan had given her to pass along to him.
Good Lord! I've got to get to Zephyr right away!
I'm going with you!
Beaumont's horse was already saddled and ready. He was planning a trip to town to check up on Frank. That was going to save him some time now.
Your horse is beat. If you can't keep up, I'll leave you behind.
Don't worry about me, but if you can't keep up, I'll leave you behind!
Callie heeled her horse into an instant gallop and sped away. Tyler followed suit, just trying to keep up. Callie was getting everything she could from her gallant horse and surprising Beaumont. They saw the dust in the air and caught the unmistakable smell of a large herd before they came within sight of the pens. As they drew closer, they could hear thousands of cattle. They passed the corrals and rode up to the scattering of chuck wagons parked near the full pens that lined the railroad tracks. As they headed toward the Slash D chuckwagon, Ed McDonald stepped out and raised a hand to stop them.
Hold it, you two!
There's no time for that, Ed.
Where's Dugan?
What the hell? What do you want?
A gang of outlaws is about to attack and try to stampede your herds and wipe you out.
Outlaws? You mean sodbusters and nesters and greasy sack cowpokes, don't you? No offense, ma'am.
The hell there's not! Yes, my brother and some of his friends are with them. But the men who are really behind it are outlaws like Ranger Beaumont said. They fooled Al and the others.
What you're saying doesn't make any sense.
Listen to me. This whole range war has been planned so that the men behind it can loot the county.
Some of the other Slash D punchers had come up to listen. Pitch Carey spoke up.
What do you mean, the men behind it?
Ace McElvey, Skeet Harlan, and that gunslinger Cobra. They're all working together.
Hold on, men. That at least sounds mighty interesting. I wouldn't mind hearing more, Ranger.
Beaumont opened his mouth to explain, but before he could say anything, the rattle of gunfire suddenly came through the morning air. The cattle became more frantic, surging back and forth in the pens, putting a strain even on the thick rails that enclosed them.
Too late for that! Here they come now!
Frank and Sheriff Wilmot did their best to ready the available deputies for the oncoming assault. Together, they checked ammunition and loaded weapons.
You should tell your men to try not to kill members of Rawlins' bunch, Sheriff. They don't know they're being used.
They know they're about to try to break some prisoners out of jail. They'll have to take their chances.
Sheriff, these people are your friends.
I'll tell the boys to concentrate on Coburn and them other outlaws. Here's more ammo, Morgan. I think we're gonna need it.
I got a hold of as many fellas as I could, Sheriff, and told them to get down here as fast as they could.
Good.
I'm going out. Most of the gang will head for the banks downtown. Hold the jail, and I'll try to stop the outlaws.
By yourself? One man ain't no match for that gang.
Let me take Chris Kane with me. If he's strong enough to be up and around and use a gun.
Kane's a prisoner.
I'll go with him and Morgan and keep an eye on him, Sheriff.
Now I reckon 3 men against 15 or 20 is better than one. Go let Kane out and give him a gun.
Frank hurried along the corridor to the cell block. Kane had heard the commotion and was standing at the door of his cell, grasping the bars.
What's going on?
Need some help if you're up to it, Kane. Can you move around some and handle a gun?
You letting me out?
Yeah. You and me and Morgan are gonna go fight a gang of outlaws.
All right. I'll do what I can. Don't know how much strength I've got after being laid up, but I'll do my best.
Here's a gun. Don't get any ideas about escaping, son. You're coming back here when it's all over, if you live through it. Let's go out the alley door here.
Morgan and Kirkland and Kane went out the back door of the jail and trotted toward the downtown area a couple of blocks away. As they did, several riders with bandanas masking the lower halves of their faces swept past the jail and pounded on toward them.
Here they come! Get ready!
He brought the Winchester to his shoulder. Beside him, Kirkland crouched and aimed a rifle, while Kane went to one knee and leveled his revolver. All three of them fired at the same time. Three of the onrushing outlaws went out of their saddles, drilled cleanly. Frank and Kirkland fired again, and two more men tumbled off their horses. That broke the back of the charge.
Good shooting! Got some cover!
The three men spread out, Frank on one side of the street, while Kane and Kirkland went to the other side. For a long moment, guns blazed fiercely as Frank and Kirkland fired their rifles as fast as they could work the levers, and Kane emptied his 6th gun. Bullets whined and sang around the defenders as the outlaws on horseback returned the fire. That much racket drew plenty of attention. The churches were empty, and although most men no longer carried guns to church, they had rifles and shotguns in the buggies and wagons that had brought them to services. As Frank reloaded the Winchester while he knelt behind a rain barrel, he turned and shouted to the men rushing along the street.
Take cover! Outlaws attacking the town!
It took only a moment for the citizens of Brownwood to figure out what was going on. Even though civilization had come to this part of Texas, the frontier was still in the blood of these men. They were ready to fight to defend what was theirs. The outlaws never had a chance. The forces of lawlessness swept into Brownwood, thinking that these Texans were soft and would be easily distracted and overcome. Instead, the raiders ran right into a storm of lead that sighed through them and sent them flying from their saddles. Wounded men hit the ground, struggled upright, and were riddled as they tried to lift their guns. Frank, Kane, and Kirkland led the battle, but within minutes, they had a formidable force at their backs.
Well done, men! Stay ready in case they charge us again!
Down at the jail, Sheriff Wilmot and his handful of deputies were putting up a fierce resistance as well, and the ranchers who had come to free their friends soon realized that their so-called allies, the men Flint Coburn had sent to help them, had deserted them instead.
Looks like they're pulling back. I think they're trying to decide if this is really worth dying over.
Nothing was going like it was supposed to go. The carefully laid plans were being shot to hell.
Marshal! Marshal Kiever! Come quick! There's trouble!
The townsmen stopped short and gaped at the sight of Kiever and Harlan locked up in their own cell.
What the heck?
The keys! Get the keys and let us out of here, man!
The outlaws in town! They're attacking the jail and trying to get to the banks! You gotta help stop them!
Darting out, Harlan went to the desk and grabbed a spare 6-shooter from one of the drawers.
What are we gonna do?
I'm gonna get my hands on some money while I still can.
What do you mean?
The marshal grabbed Harlan's shoulder, causing red rage to shoot through Harlan. The deputy palmed out the Colt and pressed the muzzle against Kiever's chest.
And you're gonna die.
Please, Skeet, don't! I won't tell any...
Now I'm sure you won't tell anybody.
Oh, my God.
Ace McElvey sat motionless in his office, his heart pounding with fear and his face coated with beads of sweat. He had just looked down the street and seen Frank Morgan leading the fight against Coburn's men.
Oh, it can't be. Morgan is supposed to be dead. How could Harlan be so stupid?
There was only one thing to do. He had quite a bit of money stashed in the safe in his office. He would grab it and get out of here while he still had the chance. Harlan and Coburn wouldn't get their shares, but that was just too damned bad. He had always intended to double-cross them anyway.
No, don't shoot!
The saloon keeper froze. His hand hovered above not only the sack of money, but also the pistol that lay beside it.
Going after the loot you got stashed there, McElvey. I'm much obliged to you. You saved me the trouble of making you open the safe.
Oh, thank God it's you, Deputy. I was worried. I was just gonna come find you, Skeet. Looks like things are going bad out there. We'll take what's in here and get the hell out while we still can.
What about Coburn?
The hell with him!
So you double-cross a partner just like that, eh? Somehow I figure you were gonna say the hell with me too, Ace.
Oh, no, of course not. You and I have been in on this together from the first. Coburn came into it later. It's you and me, Skeet. We'll go somewhere else, come up with a new plan.
I don't think so. That money's going with me. I don't care what you do, McElvey. The way your fancy plan is falling apart, I don't think I want to be your partner no more.
All right, I'll split the money with you.
Harlan just shook his head. His finger tightened on the trigger of his gun. McElvey fought off the pain and grabbed the pistol, twisting around as he slumped against the open door of the safe. He saw the blonde whore, Annie, standing there looking down at the bloodstain spreading across the midsection of the house dress she wore. Harlan, spooked by her unexpected entrance, had fired again out of instinct, drilling her.
Ace!
Damn!
McElvey fired, catching Harlan somewhere in the body with the slug. He wasn't sure exactly where he hit the deputy because his eyesight was blurring. He tried to squeeze off another shot, but... He saw all his hopes and plans and dreams, all the money and power he would have had, sliding down into a deep, dark, bottomless well. Then he slid into the darkness after them and saw nothing but death. Frank, Kane, and Kirkland had been forced to fall back a little during the last determined charge by the remaining outlaws. But along with the other defenders who had fired from behind wagons and water troughs, they had mowed down the last of the raiders.
Kane! Kirkland! Are you two all right? There's blood on your shirt, Chris. Did your wounds open up again?
Don't worry, Morgan. It's a fresh crease. I'm okay.
And I'm not hit at all. Thanks for asking, Morgan.
Did you hear that?
It sounded like a woman.
Sounded like it came from the palace.
Oh, God! Annie!
Morgan broke into a run toward the place, tossing aside the empty rifle. Kane and Kirkland followed him. As Frank burst into the palace, he saw the bartender, Rusty, cradling the limp form of Annie. The whore called Midge followed them, her hands pressed to her mouth in horror.
Oh, Annie!
Out the back! It's Keith Harlan! He killed the boss and shot Annie!
Frank ran into the office and saw the rear door standing open. He glanced at McElvey, who was sprawled face down in a pool of blood.
That's just what you deserved, Ace.
Frank lunged out the door and saw Harlan limping away, a gun in one hand and a heavy canvas bag in the other.
Harlan! Turn around, deputy!
Morgan.
Drop the gun, Harlan. I can see the blood all over your shirt. I know you're hit. It's all over.
How about we test our speed like you suggested, Morgan? I'll leather my iron, you leather yours. We'll settle it man to man.
It wouldn't be a fair fight. You're hit. It wouldn't settle anything. Maybe another day.
Yeah. Another day.
In a last act of defiance, Skeet Harlan jerked his gun up.
Still say, I'm faster. I'll see you in hell, Morgan.
Not today, Deputy. Not today.
Harlan's eyes glazed over, and his head fell to the side as life departed from him. Frank holstered his gun and picked up the canvas bag. He assumed it was full of money, but didn't take the time to check. He hurried back into the palace instead. When he got there, he found Chris Kane hovering anxiously beside the table where Annie lay. Doc Yantis had arrived while Frank was dealing with Harlan and was examining the young woman's wound.
Don't work yourself up into a state, young fella. It's not as bad as it looks. The bullet went through clean, and I think it missed her vitals. Soon as I get the bleeding stopped, we'll take her over to my office and get her patched up.
Thanks, Doc.
Yeah, I reckon I better get the prisoner back down to the jail. Looks like all the fighting's over.
I think Kane can be released into your custody for a while longer. At least until Annie here's out of the woods.
You don't have to worry about me. I'm not going anywhere.
Good work out there, Chris. With Harlan dead and everybody knowing what a crook he was, I'd say there's a good chance all the charges against you might just wind up being dismissed.
Thanks to you, Mr. Morgan.
I'm heading down to the jail for a minute. I'll tell the sheriff where he can find you to if he wants you. I expect he'll still be pretty busy for a while, though.
Wilmot was busy, all right, supervising, as his deputies locked up the ranchers who had ridden into town to bust the jail wide open.
You got what you wanted, Morgan. None of those hotheads are dead. Some of them are shot up a mite, but I reckon they'll live to stand trial.
It might go a long way toward establishing peace in the county if you saw to it they don't go to prison, Sheriff.
Not go to prison? They put bullet holes in my jail!
The judge might see his way clear to fining them for disturbing the peace and unlawfully discharging their guns. They never would have done such a thing if they hadn't been pushed into it by McElvey and Harlan and Coburn.
Oh yeah, those bastards. What happened to them?
McElvey and Harlan are both dead.
Frank told the sheriff where he could find the bodies.
I don't know about Coburn. I didn't even see him during the fighting.
I did. He was around right at first, but he took off mighty fast when he saw that things weren't going his way. Headed southeast last I saw.
Toward Zephyr.
That'd be a good guess.
I should locate my horse and get down there.
That's fine, Morgan. I'll just stay here and clean up the mess.
The riders swept out of the hills southwest of Zephyr, firing and yelling as they came. Some of the cowboys from the big ranch crews leaped into their saddles and raced out to meet the raiders head-on, while others rode around the pens so they would be ready in case any of the cattle broke through the fences and stampeded.
All right, men! Let's give it to them good!
Beaumont found himself riding with Dugan, McDonald, Carey, and the rest of the Slash D punchers as they started returning the raiders' fire.
Callie, you stay back!
I don't think so, Ranger. I need to get my brother and tell him what's going on. Maybe I can get him to call this thing off.
It's too late for that! Nothing is gonna stop this fight!
The area near the cattle pens was a madhouse of riders swirling around each other, smoke and dust fogging the air, spurts of muzzle flare, the whine of bullets, the cries of wounded men. Suddenly, Al Rawlings appeared out of the dust and smoke, drawing a bead on Beaumont from only a few feet away. Before he could fire, Callie appeared beside him and rammed her horse into his. Both animals went down, throwing Rawlings and Callie.
Rawlings! You were set up! Coburn's an outlaw! He and his gang are gonna double-cross you!
What?
It's a trap! A trap for all of us, for both sides!
Callie pulled herself over to them, and Beaumont saw that she had been hurt when she was thrown from her horse.
It's true, Al! You've been tricked! We've all been tricked!
Coburn! He went to Brownwood with the others!
To rob the banks there! Not to get Chris Kane out of jail!
Callie! This is really true?
Yes, Al! Yes, it is!
Dugan and the Slash D aren't your enemies! Coburn and his bunch are!
Let me up! Let me up, dammit! Hold your fire! Hold your fire!
Earl Dugan rode up at that moment and swung down swiftly from his saddle. As he landed on his feet, he raised his gun and lined it up on Rollins. Beaumont stepped between them.
Stop it, Dugan! It's over! Rollins knows now he was tricked into fighting you!
The hell you say! Coburn and the others couldn't have used him and his bunch if they hadn't already hated us!
You fenced us in! You tried to squeeze us off range that was legally ours!
Will both of you bull-headed bastards just stop it? You can hash it all out later. For now, you've got outlaws to deal with.
I don't know.
Callie suddenly crumpled as one of her legs went out from under her.
Callie!
I'm all right. I just twisted my leg when I got knocked off my horse trying to keep you from killing a ranger, you big idiot! Now you and Dugan go deal with those outlaws.
What do you say?
All right. Let's go get them, Rollins.
I'm with you.
They plunged back into the fighting, which had swirled past them. The initial charge of the outlaws had carried them all the way to the cattle pens. Men blazed away at each other over the backs of the wildly milling beasts. Some fought from horseback, while others were on foot. Rawlings and Dugan raced here and there, shouting for their men to stop fighting with each other and turn their guns on Coburn's hired killers. The tide of battle shifted as more and more of the men understood what was really going on. But the outcome was still very much up in the air.
Stay here.
Give me a gun, Ty. I seem to have lost mine.
I don't have an extra. Looks like you're out of the fight, Callie.
She reached up and unhooked a skillet that was hanging on the side of the wagon.
Run some of them this way. I'll make their heads hurt.
You are something else, Miss Stratton.
He had gone only a few feet when a rider came out of the smoke and dust beside him. Beaumont recognized Flint Coburn's lean, hate-filled face. As Beaumont fell, Coburn's horse reared above him, and the killer tried to bring his gun down for another shot that would finish Beaumont off. Frank had hoped to catch up to Coburn before the gunman could reach Zephyr, but Coburn had too big a lead. Frank didn't catch sight of Coburn until after he heard the gunshots and saw the clouds of dust and powder smoke hanging over the cattle pen, where the battle was taking place. Surging ahead, Frank spotted Coburn, saw the killer nearly ride down a man on foot. Coburn fired, knocking down the man. And as Frank drew nearer, he felt horror and fury go through him as he recognized Tyler Beaumont. Frank's shot burned across the rump of Coburn's horse and sent it leaping wildly in the air. Coburn fell from the saddle.
Tyler!
I'm all right! Get Coburn!
Frank spotted Coburn ducking around the corner of one of the cattle pens. The shooting was dying away now as the crews from the big ranches and the men from the smaller spreads fought side by side for a change against the outlaws. The air was still full of a terrible racket, though, from the bawling of the cattle and the clashing of their horns. Frank ran after Coburn, stopping at the corner of the pen and glancing around it. Then he triggered a quick shot around the corner and followed it with a sprint that took him toward Coburn's position. A slug sang past Frank's ear. He went down in a rolling dive and came up triggering. The bullets drove Coburn back against the rails of the pen behind him. He hung there for a second, grimacing in pain as blood welled from the holes in his chest.
You've killed me, Morgan.
Seems that way, Coburn.
Oh, don't heartless seem right.
Seems like justice to me.
Then, the terror-stricken steers behind Coburn surged against the fence again, and it gave way at last. Frank leaped over to another pen and pulled himself up on the fence, perching on the top rail and holding on for dear life as it shook underneath him. The stampeding cattle rolled on past him. When the last of the runaway cattle had gone past him, Frank dropped to the ground again and hurried to find Beaumont.
The ranger's over there, if you're looking for him, Morgan.
Much obliged.
He hurried over to the Slash D chuck wagon where Carrie was pointing. Beaumont was sitting on the tailgate with Callie Stratton. Rawlings was there too, along with Dugan and the rest of the Slash D riders. Wing was winding a bandage around Beaumont's wounded leg.
Frank! Did you get Coburn?
He's dead. I started the ball rolling, but the stampede finished him off.
Serves him right.
Don't know what he hoped to accomplish.
What he planned to do was play both sides against each other, then wipe out anybody who was left. Same thing was going on in Brownwood. The ultimate goal was for Ace McElvey to take over Brown County, I reckon.
McElvey?
I'm thinking he was the mastermind behind the whole thing. But Coburn was in on it with him, and so was Skeet Harlan.
I can believe it of Harlan. He was always a vicious little polecat.
And you were a damn fool to let them use you that way, Rawlings.
Me a damn fool? What about you? You caused as much trouble as I did. Hell, you blew up Fern Gladwell. As fine a man as I ever knew.
I'm damn sorry about that.
It'll take more than sorry. There'll always be bad blood between you and me, Dugan. There'll always be trouble between you range hogs and the fellas who just want to make an honest living and have their own spreads.
No, there won't. It's over. You fellas will work this out, or the Rangers will work it out for you.
Well, I don't reckon it'd hurt anything to put up some gates in those fences and let you drive across our range when you need to. As long as you keep your cows on your range the rest of the time.
I wouldn't want my cows eating your grass.
I got better grass than you'll ever have on that greasy sack outfit of yours.
Oh, shut up. Both of you. I'm tired of the fighting. There's been a lot of wrong and a lot of hurt on both sides. But like Ty says, it's over. You've got to learn to get along now, or else.
Or else what?
Or else you'll have a lot of killing to do all over again. And I don't think anybody wants that.
For a moment, no one said anything. But then Rawlings nodded.
Nah, I don't want that. There's been enough killing. We'll work it out. But I won't shake your hand.
I don't want you to.
Frank and Beaumont looked at each other, and weary smiles creased their gun-smoked, grimed faces. On this violent Sunday, the fence-cutting war had finally come to a close.
It's only been a week since you hurt your leg, Kelly. You seem to be getting on real well with that cane.
Yes. Except for this leg, everything seems to be getting back to normal around here.
A lot had happened in that week. The charges against Chris Kane had been dismissed. Rawlings and his friends had been levied fines and suspended jail sentences for their part in the trouble. And a new town marshal had been appointed to replace Sean Keever, who had been found dead in his office along with one of the townsmen. Nobody was quite sure what had happened, but Frank was convinced that Skeet Harlan had murdered the two men. There had been a couple of loud, angry meetings in the town hall between the big ranchers and the owners of the smaller outfits, but no gunplay had been involved. They were making real progress, Frank thought. He and Callie had attended services at the First Baptist Church this morning, and now they were on their way to the livery stable, where Frank would pick up Stormy and Wolf.
Have you heard anything from Ranger Beaumont?
He's doing fine. He's back in Weatherford with his wife. I reckon he'll be a mite gimpy for a while. But he's got a good woman to take care of him. He'll be rangering again before you know it.
They passed the palace saloon.
So Rusty is taken over at the palace.
Yes, at least for the time being. Nobody really knew anything about McElvey, whether or not he had any heirs.
What about Annie?
Oh, she won't be working there any longer. Chris Kane has taken her out to his place to recuperate.
I have a feeling that's where she'll stay.
What about you, Frank? What will you do now?
Oh, I'm not sure. Some folks call me the Drifter, you know. There's a reason for that. Guess I'm just too fiddle-footed to stay in one place for too long.
You could stay here. You've made friends here, and you'd be welcome.
Frank paused and looked at her, reading the meaning of her words in her green eyes. And while the prospect was tempting, he knew he couldn't do it. Callie knew it, too.
Oh, well, it was worth a try.
They walked on to the livery, where Stormy was saddled and waiting. Wolf sat patiently beside the big Appaloosa.
Take care of yourself, Frank Morgan.
I will.
He took the hand that she held out to him, leaned forward, and brushed a kiss across her cheek.
I'll be back one of these days.
Don't expect me to wait for you. A no-account gunfighter like you... You may never get back.
Well, maybe not.
Then, with a smile, he turned to the horse, put his foot in the stirrup, stepped up, and swung his leg over Stormy's back. With that, he turned the Appaloosa and heeled the big horse into a trot. Wolf fell in behind him. Twisting around in the saddle, Frank lifted a hand in farewell. Callie leaned on her cane with one hand and returned the wave with the other.
Don't expect me to wait for you, gunfighter.
But she knew in her heart that she would do it anyway.
The Last Gunfighter, Violent Sunday is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2005, William W. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2009, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Ken Jackson, James Konacek, David Coyne, Jeff Baker, Michael Replogle, Richard Rowan, Dylan Lynch, Margie Tompros, James Lewis, Christopher Graybill, Stephen Carpenter, Joe Brack, Michael Glenn, Tim Getman, Elizabeth Jernigan, Jonathan Watkins, Jason Stiles, Tim Carlin, Tom Simpson, Casey Platt, Kate Foster, Terrence Aselford, and Mort Shelby. Directed by Ken Jackson. Book adapted for Graphic Audio by Jimmy Payne. Dialogue editing and Graphic Audio sound design by Greg Reinfeld and Brian Rogers. Original music and title theme by Johann Detweiler. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed The Last Gunfighter, be sure to look for the series Sidewinders, as well as Smoke Jensen, The Mountain Man. Available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. Keep listening for previews of other Graphic Audio thrillers. Scratch Morton and Bo Creel, two aging cowpokes and friends for years, have seen their share of cattle drives, shootouts, and bust-ups. They do their best to stay on the right side of the law and never go looking for trouble, but it seems to find them just the same.
That sounds like trouble. We taking cards in this game?
I reckon. Since we don't know the details, might be better if we tried not to kill anybody.
In Arizona, they get stuck in the midst of a battle between competing stagecoach lines. Of course, a pretty woman who happens to own one of the lines has a lot to do with it, and things aren't quite what they seem.
Gil told us about how Rance Judson and his gang have been running roughshod over this part of the territory for a while.
There's a man named Jared Rutledge who has a freight line that runs between Red Butte, Chino Valley, and Cottonwood. As it turns out, Mr. Rutledge planned to begin running stagecoaches in addition to his freight wagons, but our arrival here ruined that for him.
I know you think that I'm somehow to blame for Abigail's troubles, but I'm not. I can see the writing on the wall, though. The Sutherland stage line is doomed, and if you stay there, you'll go down with it.
You think Dave's trying to hunt down those outlaws?
I think Dave is meeting those outlaws.
What? You're saying that he's one of the gang?
It would explain some things.
This is gonna just about kill his ma.
That's why we're not gonna tell her.
Seems like trouble's been coming at us from all sides.
William W. Johnstone's Sidewinders.
Well, good luck, fellas. I got a feeling you'll be needing it.
Yeah, we always need luck.
Yeah, but this time you'll be heading straight into the lion's den, just like that fella in the Bible.
You mean Daniel?
No, I'm talking about the fella who went in there before Daniel, the one you ain't never heard of, because he got plumb ate up.
Attention all hands, attention all hands. This is the captain. I regret to inform all of you that Speaker of the Grand Council, Lord Thornbuckle, is dead. Assassinated on Castle Rock.
It's been confirmed by 3 separate agencies, Malone.
How many were killed or injured?
Lord Thornbuckle and 3 security personnel killed. Sir Mahoney is alive, but in critical condition.
A terrible, terrible situation.
Terrible for some, certainly.
So we're too late and somebody got him first. So what do we do?
Get the rest of them. If he's dead, maybe they won't be watching so close. I could take that yellow-haired slut.
We have a mission. A new mission. Got it?
Yes, sir.
Miranda, what have they told you about it? About who did it?
Nothing. I know the news media says it was the New Texas Militia.
Miranda, I don't think it was the New Tex Militia.
No.
Since Lord Thornbuckle is dead and cannot reply, some might consider it unnecessary to detail the charges that might have been brought against him, but I believe in full and fair disclosure. The fact is, the Familius Regnant is sick, on its deathbed, and if we don't act quickly, the patient could die.
How did Hobart Consoline become Speaker?
I'm Ranger Briley, but you can call me Kate.
What do you make of our Speaker?
He's nobody I'd buy a ranch from. Now, why don't you get down to what you really wanted to talk about?
I want to find out who killed my father, and what kind of hold Hobart Consoline has on my Uncle Hollis, who's after my father's estate.
Now that's a goal we can work on.
We?
Of course we. Hell's bells, sweetheart. I'm not gonna leave you to hunt this hog alone. It's time I went to work.
Serrano Legacy, Book 6, Change of Command, Part 1, from Graphic Audio. If you can't find that Graphic Audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.